Do you feel a shiver up your spine from fear? Yes, it's another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind. Amp up your imagination and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted. The Fourth Seal by Carl Edward Wagner. I had a friend at St. John's. You would have liked to meet, observed Dr. Metzger. At least the idea you've brought up reminds me of some of our old undergraduate bull sessions. Bull sessions, responded Dr. Thackeray, his frosty brows wavering askance. Jeff laughed easily. Never underestimate the value of a liberal arts background, Dr. Thackeray. St. John's men could find loftier subjects to drain a keg of beer over than the matter of a cheerleader's boobs, especially with cheerleaders in short supply. No, Kirk Walker was something of a medievalist, and certainly romanticist, fancied himself the last of the Renaissance men, or some such, I imagine. Anyway, he used to put away booze like a Viking raiding party, and often he'd kick around some impossibly half-assed ideas. Argue them with dignified tenacity through all our hooting, and you were never sure whether he was serious or handing us another piece of outrageous whimsy. But one of the points he liked to bring up was this idea that modern science, as we call it, isn't all that modern. Maintained that substantial scientific knowledge and investigation have existed on a recondite basis since early history, and not just as hocus-pocus. As I have suggested, Dr. Thackeray nodded, drawing on a cigar and tilting his padded desk chair a fraction closer to overbalance. Pity Kirk isn't here to talk with a kindred soul, Jeff Metzger continued. He used to drag out all manner of evidence to support his claim, go on about Egyptian artifacts, Greek thinkers, Byzantine and later Roman writings, Islamic studies after the Roman lake changed owners, Jewish Kabbalism, secret researches by certain monks, on through the Dark Ages and into the so-called Renaissance, even throughout bits of Chinese history. He'd go wild talking about the Quattrocento and the Cinquecento and dozens of Italian names no one else had heard of. Then Central Europe and France and England and people like Bacon and Paracelsus and Albertus Magnus. That was really the astonishing thing. I mean, all of us at St. John's were supposed to be well-read and well-versed in the classics and those great and moldy books, but Kirk was something else. God knows how much that guy must have read. Your friend Walker sounds like a man I ought to meet, Dr. Thackeray broke in. Metzger's face saddened. I'm sorry to say you can't. Quite a tragic story about old Kirk. He went on to med school after St. John's, too. Some big southern school of notable reputation. Wasn't happy there for some reason. Ran afoul of the administration. Left after a rather stormy scene. Died not long thereafter. Hodgkin's, I believe. Everyone felt bad about it at the time. A pity. Yes, it was. I must say I'm surprised to find someone of your position giving credence to such similar ideas. Guess maybe we took Kirk more lightly than we might have. Still, he was always one for elaborate jokes. Strange guy. Jeff's eye fell to wandering along the impressively filled shelves which lined Dr. Thackeray's office. These walls of conglomerate knowledge, concentrated to blocky solidity, properly bound and systematically shelved, exuded the weighty atmosphere of learned dignity that one expected for the sanctum of the chairman of the Department of Medicine. And why did your friend believe this unsuspected depth of scientific knowledge was kept in secret? The older man asked carefully. Kirk was vague, returned Metzger, downing his acrid coffee before it got colder. A grimy residue stained the bottom of the styrofoam cup, and he reflected bitterly that hospital coffee deteriorated with every medical center he came to. He had several reasons, though. For one thing, he'd argue that our basic conception of the past comes through writings of the past, and that these writers viewed their world from their own particular set of terms. The idea of progress, in fact, the conception of science, as we understand it, is a relatively modern development of thought. In another age, This was altogether different. To the bulk of the populace, scientific knowledge would have been no more than a pointless exercise useless to them. What would a serf care about a microscope? It wouldn't clothe and feed him. What would an intellectual care about the discovery of microorganisms? Plagues were the punishment of God or the work of Satan. And the language of the day was totally different. There simply were no words, or even systems of thought, to convey scientific conceptions. Thus, every man who studied the stars was an astrologer, while the thoughtful investigator of elemental or molecular structure was only another alchemist seeking to create gold. And to be sure, many of these men were only superstitious dabblers in the occult. With the ignorance or even hostility of most writers of the day, fool and genius were lumped together, and the early scientist was categorized as beings in leagues with the devil. He was ignored and mocked at best, more often persecuted by the authorities of the land. We know of several brilliant thinkers who were condemned to the stake for their efforts, or had near misses, like Galileo. Is it any wonder, then, that Walker's proto-scientists kept their work secret, shared their discoveries only with a select brotherhood? At least, that was Kirk's theory. Dr. Thackeray considered a cigar. Interesting and, as you say, tragic. Medicine needs men of this caliber. And men like yourself, Dr. Metzger. Jeff smiled at the compliment. Coming from the grand old man, it meant a lot. I consider myself fortunate to be associated with the medical center here. Good. And I'll say that we're all delighted you decided to join us. You're a capable man, Dr. Metzger. Your record is brilliant. Those of us who have watched you feel certain you'll go far in medicine. Further, perhaps, than you might imagine. Thank you, sir. Not at all. I'm merely stating facts. I knew your father during my residency, you know. And he was a splendid physician himself. So I'm pleased that you decided to take a position here at the center. It's good to learn the facilities are up to your expectations and that you're getting your lab set up to suit you. He gestured toward the sheaf of papers. Jeff had carried with him. I like the way you've drawn this together. I'd say it's dead certain the grant will go through. I'm counting on it, sir. Dr. Thackeray brandished his cigar. Oh, it will. It will. You've stated the scientific aspects of it beautifully, and now we'll handle the political end of things. Politics, as you'll learn, count for a great deal. A very great deal, Dr. Metzger. No doubt, Jeff laughed dryly. It had been a good move, thought Metzger, pausing to look over his new lab facilities. A damn good move. He could make his name here at the center. It was a heady feeling to be in charge of his own research project, a major project at a medical center of considerable renown, and still a young man by his colleague standards. But Jeffrey Metzger was inured to honors. He was, after all, the center's prize catch, hotly contested for by any number of major institutions, head of his class at St. John's and Harvard Medical School, and he could have been one of the youngest men to finish if he had not chosen the roundabout course of a liberal arts education, a few sojourns in Europe, and a combined MD-PhD biochemistry program at Harvard. Afterward, he had taken his pick of the most prestigious internships and residencies, finishing as chief resident in one of the nation's best hospital centers, then a stint with the public health service in the poverty belt, in effect voluntary, since his family connections were sufficient to keep him out of military service. An uncle with a governorship, a brother doing very well in the vice presidential ladder of a very big corporation, and a good marriage socially. Another brother was becoming known in legal medicine, and his father-in-law was partner in a string of ear, nose, and throat clinics in Detroit. Medicine had called members of his family for several generations. Jeff had himself followed his father into internal medicine. His father, very influential in the AMA, was supposedly slated for its top post at the time of his death from a coronary. A good record, as Dr. Thackeray had observed, and no reason why it should not continue to shine Metzger's previous research work, extending back to his undergraduate days and assuming considerable stature during his residency, had led to numerous publications and no little acclaim. Clearly he was a man who was going places, and the center was quite proud when he accepted their extremely generous offer. They had given him a free hand in a superbly equipped lab in their newest research facility, the position of attending physician on the medical staff, and they had made it plain that this was merely a start for him, that there shortly would be important vacancies in the hierarchy of the center. Yes, it had been a damn good move. Jeff grimaced and crumpled his styrofoam cup. and one of the first additions to his lab equipment was going to be a private coffee urn. Part 2. "Did you notice that ring Sid Lipton had on last night?" asked Gwen. "What?" Jeff, a persistent headache reminding him of the cocktail party at Trelane's the night before, was trying to watch the morning news. "Sid had on a sort of signet ring," Gwen persisted. "Did you notice?" "What? No, guess I didn't. It was an ornate silver ring with a large black onyx, I think. Into the onyx was set a kind of silver medallion or seal. It looked like a fraternity ring or something, but I couldn't place it. I thought maybe you knew what it was." "Haven't noticed it. Dr. Lipton usually scrubbed for surgery whenever I see him, or always looks that way. Don't think I've ever seen him wear anything on his hands but rubber gloves." "Want some more orange juice?" "Well, it was strange because when I went to the girls' room, I passed Sid and Bryce Thackeray in the hall. And Bryce seemed like he was upset or something, because Sid had on the ring."
"Upset?"
"Well, maybe not, but they were talking over something in a not very casual manner, and it seemed like the ring was part of it. They stopped when I walked by and moved back in with a party." "Did you see that slutty dress Tess Gilman had on?"
"Huh? No."
"I'll bet. A see-through blouse with her figure? You could see where her body stocking had padded inserts, and all you men ogling her like she was Raquel or something."
"Gwen, I'm trying to listen to the news."
Her face tightened. "Damn the news! You spend all day between the hospital and your lab, and when you do get home in time to talk, all you do is tell me about the hospital, tell me about your research. Damn it, you might at least try to pay a little attention to me over the breakfast table."
"Sweetheart, they're talking about Senator Hollister. He had a cardiovascular accident last night and died. Forgive me if I find the death of the front-running liberal candidate for the next presidential election of somewhat greater interest than your rehash, the highlights of another boring cocktail party."
"Well, I'm sorry if you find spending an evening with your wife boring," she returned hotly. The news moved on to the latest catastrophe in Pakistan.
"Gwen, honey, that wasn't what I meant."
"Well, damn it, Jeff. You don't have to brush off everything I say. I put up with that miserable last year of Harvard, and then your internship in that filthy city, gone all the time, and home every other night just to sleep. Then that endless residency period, when everything was supposed to get better, and you'd have more free time. But you didn't, because you were doing work on your own in that lab, and that miserable stay in the heartland of coal mines and grits while you played the medical missionary. And all this was supposed to lead up to you when you could be the big man in the big medical complex and name your own hours and pay some attention to me for a change. Remember me? I'm your wife. Would you like to stuff me away with some of those damn virus cultures you're forever playing with?"
"I've heard this before," thought Jeff, knowing that he would hear it again. And she wasn't being all that unfair, he also realized. But he was running late, and this lingering hangover left him in no mood to talk things out again.
"Honey, it happens that I'm at a crucial stage right now, and I really have to keep at it," he offered by way of reconciliation. "Besides, we went to the cocktail party at Trelane's last night, didn't we? We were together then, weren't we?"
"Big deal," Gwen sniffled.
"It was a lousy party. All you talk about was medicine."
Jeff sighed and glanced at his watch. "Look, I don't want to make this sound too dramatic, but what I'm working on now could be big. I mean, big. How big it might be, I haven't even told my colleagues. I don't want to look like a fool if it doesn't work out. But, honey, I think it is going to work out. And if it does, I have made a breakthrough like no one since.
Well, it will be a breakthrough."
"Swell. You mean you'll have discovered a whole new way to implant zits on a monkey's navel or some other thrilling discovery that all the journals can argue about?" Gwen was not to be placated.
Giving it up, Jeff bent to kiss her. She turned her face, and he got a mouthful of brown curls. "Baby, it really could be big. If it is, well, things could get a whole lot different for us in a hurry. I'll take any change. The sooner, the better," she murmured, raising her chin a little.
"Trust me, sweetheart. Hey, look, you were fussing about your party dress last night. Why don't you go out today and pick out a new one? Something nice, whatever you like, okay?"
"Hmm," he said, his wife letting him kiss her cheek.
What news today? Jeff glanced up from his stack of electron photomicrographs.
Oh, hi, Dave.
And to atone for the trace of irritation in his voice, he added,
Have a cup of coffee?
Muchas gracias, his visitor replied, turning to the large coffee urn Jeff had inveigled for his lab. He spooned in half a cupful of sugar and powdered cream substitute and raised the steaming container immediately to his lips, one of those whose mouths seem impervious to scalding temperatures.
Don't know why it is, but even when you brew your own, it ends up tasting rancid like all other hospital coffee, Jeff commented, half covering his pile of photographs.
Dr. Frohnberger acceded.
Know what you mean. That's why I gave up drinking it black. Rot your liver if you don't cut it with powdered goo. I think it's the water. Hospital water is shot full of chemicals. Rays, gases, dead bugs. Very healthfully unhealthful.
What you got there, Jeff? He queried, moving over to the desk. Reluctantly, Metzger surrendered the photomicrographs. Frohnberger's own labs was at the other end of the hall, and it would be impolitic to affront his neighbor. Still, he vaguely resented the frequent contacts that their proximity afforded. Not that Dave was any more than ordinarily obnoxious, but the other's research with influenza viruses impinged closely enough on some areas of his own work to raise the touchy problem of professional jealousy. Frohnberger expounded, tapping a hairy finger across several of the photos.
Right here, buddy. I can see it, too. You got that same twisted grouping along the nuclear membrane, and on these two, you can definitely see the penetration. And you can make a good argument with this one that here's the same grouping on the chromosome.
Hey, this is good stuff you're getting here, Jeff, buddy.
I think I'm making some progress, offered Metzger testily, rankled at the other's appropriation of data he had spent countless hours working toward. It would never do for Frohnberger to insinuate himself into this thing with matters such as they were.
Where's it leading you, buddy? Got anything backing this besides what the editors like to brush off as artifacts of electron microscopy?
I couldn't say, Jeff replied evasively. I'm getting some new data off these labeled cultures that may lead somewhere.
May, and again may not. That's the way it always is. I know the feeling, believe you me.
Been a few times, buddy, when I damn near thought I...
But, rats, maybe all the cherries will roll up for you this time. You never know.
Looks impressive so far, my friend. Could be we're hearing the Nobel boys sniffing outside the door.
I think that's your telephone.
It is that.
And my secretary's on break. Better catch it. Ciao. He lumbered off.
Damn. Jeff breathed, resorting his photography with fumbling touch.
Part 3.
Too late for you to help him, huh?
How's that?
Jeff looked up from his evening paper and turned towards the man, who was seating himself opposite him. It was Ira Festong, who busily rearranged his cafeteria tray, smiling cheerfully as he smothered his hospital pot roast and ketchup.
He should have taken the paper back to the lab to finish reading, Jeff reflected. He had promised Gwen he would be home before too late, and he could lose half an hour trying to break away from the garrulous epidemiologist.
I noticed you were reading the headlines about the Supreme Court Justice, said Dr. Festung, doing nothing to clarify his greeting.
I was, Jeff admitted, glancing again at the lead article, which told of Justice Freeport's death from cancer that morning.
Freeport was a good man, the second justice to die in the last few months, and both of them liberals. They'll have a hard time replacing them, especially with the administration we have right now.
Festung snorted into his ice water.
Oh, they'll probably find another couple commies to fill their seats. Don't see how you can seriously regret Freeport and Lloyd after the stands those leftists took on socialized medicine. Sure, it sounds great to be the bleeding heart humanitarian, but tell me how much of this fancy research you'd be doing as a salaried pill pusher.
Hell, look at the disaster in Britain. Is that the kind of medical care you want to dish out to the public?
If this got started again, Jeff knew he could plan to spend the whole evening in the hospital cafeteria, and afterward he'd have a sore throat and his gray-haired colleagues would shake their heads condescendingly in despair of his political judgment.
What did you mean by what you said when you sat down? He asked instead, hoping to steer the epidemiologist away from another great debate.
That? Festung wiped ketchup from his full lips.
Whiskers, and he'd look like President Taft, Metzger decided.
Well, Freeport had multiple myeloma, and from what I hear, aren't you about to come up with that long-sought breakthrough in cancer?
Festung's watery eyes were suddenly keen. Jeff fought to hold a poker face. Let word go around that the boy wonder thought he had a cure for cancer and he'd be a laughingstock if this research didn't pan out.
Oh, is that the scuttlebutt these days? He smiled carefully.
Well, I'm glad to hear somebody has even greater optimism for my project than I do. Maybe I ought to trade notes with him.
If we didn't have rumors to play with, wouldn't this medical center be a dull place to live, Dr. Festung pronounced.
Jeff laughed dutifully, although he had his own opinion of the backstabbing gossip that filled so many conversations here.
Waste of time, trying to cure cancer anyway, the epidemiologist continued. Nature would only replace it with another scourge just as deadly, and then we'd have to begin all over again.
Let it run its course and be done, I say.
Well, that's your specialty, Jeff said with a thin smile, uncertain how serious his companion meant to be taken.
Common sense, confided Festung. Common sense and simple arithmetic. That's all there is to epidemiology. Every age has its deadly plague, far back as you care to trace it. The great plagues of the ancient world, leprosy, cholera, the Black Death, they all came and went, left millions dead before they were finished, and for most of them, we can't even say for certain what disease it may have been.
Those were primitive times, Jeff shrugged. Plagues were expected and accepted. No medicine and filthy living conditions. Naturally, a plague would go unchecked, until either it killed all who were susceptible, or something like the London fire came along to cauterize the centers of contagion. More often, the plagues simply ran their course and vanished, Dr. Festung went on, in a tone of dismissal. Let's take modern times, civilized countries then. After your London fire, actually it was a change of dominant species of rat and the ebbing of the bubonic plague. Comes the Industrial Revolution to Europe, and with it strikes smallpox, and then tuberculosis. A little later, and you get the picture in this country too. Okay, you finally vaccinate against the smallpox, but what about TB? Where did TB come from anyway? Industrialization? No, sir, because TB went on to wane at the height of industrialization. And why did it? Biggest killer of its day, and now it's a rare disease. And you know medicine had damn little to do with its disappearance. Then influenza. Killed millions, and not just because medical conditions weren't what we have now. Heck, we still can't do much about the flu. Fromberger tells me his research indicates there are 2 or 3 wholly new influenza strains born, if you will, each year that we know about. Heck, we still aren't sure what strain was the great killer in the early part of the century. And talk about confusion. Why, when you say flu, you can mean anything from several bacteria to any number of viral strains and substrains.
Well, how about polio, challenged Metzger, digging for a cigarette. Festung hated tobacco smoke.
Polio. Exactly. Another killer plague that appeared from nowhere. Sure, this time we came up with a vaccine, but so we know where it went. Where did polio come from, though? Each generation seems to have its nemesis. When I was your age, the big killer was stomach cancer. Like bad weather. We talked a lot about stomach cancer, but nothing much was ever done. And it faded into the background, just the same. Instead, we had heart disease. Now there's the number one killer for these many years. The reason for billions of government dollars doled out for research.
And what have we really done about it?
Dietary fads, a few ghoulish transplants, and a pile of Rube Goldberg gadgetry that can keep things pumping for a few extra years. Sum total, too close to nothing to bother caring. But that's all right, too, because now heart disease is on the way out. And for now, our great slayer of mankind is cancer.
History and figures tell the story, young man. Cancer is here for the moment, and maybe all your research will do something about it. Then most likely it won't. But it doesn't matter in the long run, because cancer will have its heyday and fade like its predecessors at the scythe handle, and then we'll find something new to die of. Wonder what it'll be.
Someone else's worry. That's what it'll be. I suppose, as they say, you got to die of something. Jeff pushed his chair back from the table.
Meanwhile, I'll chase after today's problems. And one of the most immediate concerns, a scintillation counter run that ought to be gone through by now. See you, Ira.
Sure. Hey, how about leaving that paper if you're finished reading it?
Dr. Thackeray was waiting in the lab when Jeff returned. The great man was leaning over Metzger's desk, idly looking through several days of loose data and notes. A long white lab coat, stylishly ragged after the center's peculiar snobbery, covered his sparse frame.
A little imagination and he could make a good Halloween phantom, mused Jeff, watching the blue cigar smoke swirl about his hawk-like face. Jeff stepped into his office alcove. "Keeping late hours, Dr. Thackeray?" The chairman of medicine has no first name within the walls of his domain. "Good evening, Dr. Metzger," returned his superior. "No, not particularly. I wanted to see how things were going with you, and I felt it likely you'd still be here. Your devotion to your work has caused some comment, even among our staff. Most commendable, but I hope you aren't working yourself into an early grave." "I'll manage," Jeff promised. "I feel like I'm really getting somewhere right now, though, and I hate to let up." "Yes, I see you've made progress, Dr. Metzger." His eyes, black in the sterile glare of the fluorescence. Dr. Thackeray let his gaze gesture about the crowded laboratory. "Very significant progress in the year you've been with us here at the center." Jeff framed his words with care. "I don't like to put myself down as saying, even off the record, just how far what I'm doing here might lead, Dr. Thackeray. You've seen what I've accomplished so far, read the preliminary reports, but in the last few months I've, well, made a few unexpected breakthroughs. I think I know what it will mean, but I want absolute evidence to substantiate my findings before I speculate openly with regard to what I've learned. Forgive me if this seems melodramatic, but I have no desire to be labeled a fool, nor would I care to bring derision upon the center." "Again, commendable, Dr. Metzger. I appreciate your position, naturally. As you know, there's been some speculation among the staff relating to your most recent work, enough that some of us can understand what you're trying to lead up to." "I'm making no preliminary claims," Jeff repeated. "Between the two of us, I feel certain of my ground, but too many overeager researchers have gone off half-cocked and regretted it when their errors were immediately apparent to more careful workers." "To be sure," Dr. Thackeray turned his piercing eyes into Jeff's. "I truly admire discretion. Untold damage might result from foolish disclosures at this point. I agree." "Thank you, sir." "Not at all," Dr. Thackeray waved his hand. His expression darkened. "It's because of the position you find yourself in right now that I left these two papers on your desk." Surprised, Jeff noticed for the first time the two dull black binders waiting beside a tangle of data tapes. Their vinyl covers bore no title. Then on closer glance, he was aware of a tiny silver seal embossed on either spine. It required considerable effort to obtain those two copies, Dr. Thackeray advised. "Needless to say, I expect you to examine them with care. The data are confidential, of course, and return them to me when you've finished. Reading them is explanation enough for the present, or I'll say no more for now. I think you'll want to discuss your thoughts on this with me. How about tomorrow morning at 8? I think you will have read through them to your satisfaction by then." "Certainly," agreed Metzger in bewilderment, "if you feel that this is important to my project." "It is extremely important, Dr. Metzger, I assure you." "Very well, then. We'll talk this over at 8. With a bizarre sense of foreboding, Jeff took up the first of the black folders. Part 4. Dr. Thackeray's secretary was not present when Metzger entered the Department of Medicine office the following morning, his nerves jagged after a sleepless night. Since he knew he was expected, he knocked and entered the chairman's office. Sanctum sanctorum, soul of the center, he thought, with a tinge of hysteria. "Dr. Thackeray, I've been trying to get in touch with you all night." He halted, startled to find the chairman of surgery seated within. "It's all right, Dr. Metzger," pronounced Dr. Thackeray. "Dr. Lipton is a party to this matter we have to discuss." Numbly, Jeff dropped into the room's vacant chair. The two older men faced him with carefully composed mien, eyes alert as those of birds of prey. Jeff thumped a fist against the black vinyl folders in his lap. "God, it's all here." His eyes were feverish. "Everything I've done, all I hope to establish, a number of aspects I never considered." Dr. Thackeray nodded, eyes unblinking. "Where did you get this? If you knew someone else was working in my field, why didn't you tell me earlier? This is too important for professional jealousy. I'll gladly share any of my data with these researchers. To hell with who gets official credit." His voice began to shake. "This research, this information, it means a definite cure for almost every form of human cancer." "Why? This delineates each etiological factor involved in cancer, pinpoints two definite stages where the causative agent can be destroyed, the disease process completely arrested. This research marks the triumph of medicine over leukemia, most of the systemic dysplasia. Individual organ involvement will be virtually eradicated.
Quite true, Dr. Lipton agreed. His long surgeon fingers toyed with the silver and onyx ring he wore.
Well, no more suspense, please. Whose work is this?
Where's it being done? Jeff's excitement was undiminished by the coolness of the other two physicians.
One paper was prepared from the work of Dr. C. Johnson Taggart, Dr. Thackeray told him.
Taggart?
No wonder it's...
But Taggart died 10 years ago.
Brain tumor.
You mean they've taken as long to piece together his notes?
The other paper, as you've noticed, is considerably older. Most of it was the work of Sir David Aubrey, Dr. Thackeray concluded. Jeff stared at them to determine whether they were playing some horribly sick joke.
Aubrey died at the turn of the century.
True again. But he was responsible for most of the pioneer work in this field, Dr. Lipton added with a tone of reproof. The overweighted shelves of accumulated knowledge seemed to press down on Jeff's soul. A windowless room in the center of the complex, like a chamber of the vast heart of some monstrous entity.
I don't understand, he whispered, in a choked voice. Why hasn't this information been used before now? Why were millions left to die?
Perhaps the world wasn't ready for a cure for cancer, Dr. Thackeray replied.
That's insane. I don't understand, quavered Jeff, noticing now that Dr. Thackeray wore a ring similar to Dr. Lipton's. There was a seal set into the onyx. He had seen it before. It was stamped on the spines of the black binders.
You can understand, Dr. Thackeray was saying. This will be strange, traumatic perhaps at first, but think carefully. Would it be wise to circulate a total cure for cancer just now?
Are you serious?
You can't be. The lives, the suffering.
The price of power, Dr. Metzger.
The price of power. Just as every empire is built upon the lives and suffering of the expendable. Dr. Lipton's voice was pitiless as the edge of his scalpels, excising without rancor the organism's defective tissue.
Think of cancer in more rational terms, Dr. Thackeray went on. Have you any conception of the money invested every day in cancer research, in treatment of cancer patients?
It's incalculable, I assure you. Do you think the medical profession can sacrifice this wealth, this enormous power, just for humanitarian gesture?
But a physician's role is to heal, screamed Metzger, abstractedly noting how thoroughly the endless shelves muffled sound.
Of course. And he does heal, put in Dr. Lipton. But where would a physician be if there were no sickness to be healed?
They were mad, Jeff realized.
Or he was. He had been overworking. This was a dream, a paranoid fantasy. This knowledge made him calmer. He would follow this mad logic, at least until he could be certain in whom the insanity lay.
But some diseases are eradicated, he protested.
When they become expendable, Dr. Thackeray told him. Some, of course, simply die out or fall victim to non-medical intervention. Others we announce a cure for. Makes the profession look good. The world has restored faith in medicine, praises its practitioners, and pours more money into research. The prestige a physician enjoys in the community is an essential factor to us. Lipton's frown furrowed into his close-cropped hair as it grew low on his brow.
And sometimes we slip up, and some fool announces a major cure without our awareness.
Thank God, there's less of that now with the disappearance of independent research. As it is, we've had some damn close calls. It took a lot of work to discredit a few of those thoughtless meddlers.
Jeff remembered some of them, and now he knew fear. Fear greater than his dread of insanity. Fear that these men were all too sane.
I suppose something can happen to some of these researchers who might cause difficulty.
You make it sound like a line from a gangster movie, but yes, Dr. Thackeray acknowledged. Quite a number of them die from sudden illness, and the scientific community regrets that they left their brilliant promise unfulfilled.
It's a way of avoiding other dilemmas as well, as I think you'll follow me, Dr. Lipton growled. Meddlers who become aware of our existence, fools who would destroy the medical profession with communistic laws and regulations, endanger the social structure with ruinous legislation.
And don't look shocked, young man.
Think instead just what kind of doctor you might be right now. If some of these late and unlamented wild-eyed liberals could have done all they intended to this country and to the medical profession.
Murder, breathed Jeff weakly.
Not actually, Dr. Thackeray broke in. After all, as physicians, we have to see human society as a living organism. The social organism is subject to disease, just like any other entity. To be trite, it isn't murder to excise a cancerous growth. Regulation, treatment, sometimes drastic treatment, is essential if the organism is not to perish. This is the rationale behind all forms of government. The alternative is chaos. I think you'll agree that an educated elite is best suited to direct the social destiny of us all. After all, an epithelial cell is scarcely suited to handle the functions of a nerve cell. It functions smoothly, dies when its time comes, all because the brain, of which it has no conception, directs its course. How else would you have it?
You can't suppress medical knowledge indefinitely, Jeff returned defiantly. Someday someone will eradicate cancer. They were aware of its etiology as far back as Aubrey.
Certainly. In fact, it's amazing that Aubrey understood cancer so thoroughly, considering the relatively crude apparatus of the day.
Dr. Thackeray smiled.
But we've talked earlier about the possibility of what I believe you termed recondite scientific knowledge. And besides, Aubrey had several advantages over moderns as to the matter of his starting point.
Horror was damp on Metzger's face. The air was stifling, charged with hideous revelation.
You said he was a pioneer.
Yes, Lipton rumbled impatiently. A pioneer in the development of the disease process.
Oh my God, whispered Jeff. Oh my God.
I know this is a great deal to comprehend, Dr. Thackeray offered sympathetically. But use your intelligence. To have significant power, a physician must have an essential role. And what is more compelling than the power of life and death? If there were no diseases, there would be no need for physicians. Therefore, at certain times throughout history, it has been necessary to develop and introduce to the general population new forms of diseases.
But accidental deaths, traffic accidents, Jeff countered, striving to follow his resolve to argue the situation by their own insane reasoning.
Dr. Lipton laughed shortly. If you only knew half our efforts towards keeping cars and highways unsafe, or the medications we release for the public to abuse, or the chemical additives we've developed.
Who are you?
His nerve was going to shatter in another instant. This dispassionate, insane.
There are a number of us, Dr. Thackeray announced. A small, highly select order of medicine's elites. An ancient order, I might point out. After all, the art of medicine is as old as human suffering, is it not?
And of course, our order has grown in power with the passage of time. Today, our society is custodian of an astonishing body of medical and scientific knowledge. Our research facilities are the best in the world. We have a certain hierarchy, democratically established, of course, to oversee our operations, to direct the use of our wealth, to make those decisions vital to maintaining the order's power and security. And naturally, you can see why we've been so interested in you, Dr. Metzger. Under the relentless stare, Jeff struggled desperately to maintain an exterior calm while underneath his mind grappled with ideas too nightmarish for conception.
What do you want from me? He grated, dreading the answer.
Come now, young man, Dr. Thackeray spoke reassuringly. This isn't a high tribunal. We wish to bestow a great honor upon you, an honor reserved for only those most worthy. We want you to join in our order.
This is insane, of course, Jeff murmured, without conviction. You want me to become part of a society of inhuman despots? This is the most debased treachery to mankind that any mind could ever conceive.
It will take a certain period for your thinking to adjust to this new awareness, Dr. Lipton interceded with some rancor.
It might change matters if you knew your father was one of us.
I can't believe that. But from the dim recesses of his memory came the phantom image of a ring he once saw his father wear, a black onyx ring set with a peculiar signet.
True nonetheless, Dr. Thackeray said. I knew him well. His untimely death was a great setback to us.
So untimely death can even strike your council of petty gods? There are occasional power struggles within our... Dr. Lipton began. He was silenced by a glare from Dr. Thackeray. Naturally, we protect ourselves from our own, methods, Dr. Thackeray proceeded. As a member of our order, you will have access to medical techniques beyond the dream of those outside. Only rarely does something untoward occur. Why did you pick me? That should be obvious. It was essential to stop your present line of research, certainly. But that could have been a simple matter. No, we've had our attention on you for a great while. As I say, your father was high in our order. Your family connections are invaluable. Your own contributions to medicine would have singled you out, even had your background been quite plebeian. You're a brilliant man, Dr. Metzger. It would be difficult to postulate a candidate better qualified for membership in our order. I suppose I'm immensely flattered. You should be, the surgeon growled. And you shall be, Dr. Thackeray assured him. You will naturally want a certain length of time to consider. This is quite understandably a devastating blow to your past conceptions and ideals. We are pleased to offer you time to consider, to evaluate your position in light of this new awareness. You're an intelligent man, Dr. Metzger. I feel certain your decision will be the rational one, once you've had time to reconsider your former prejudices and misconceptions. Suppose I decide to tell the world of your unspeakable conspiracy. Who would ever believe you? It's not that unusual for an overwrought researcher to suffer nervous collapse, Dr. Lipton told him. In such cases, immediate institutional treatment is available. We become very sympathetic and work very hard to help our stricken fellow, but I'm afraid our curate is somewhat grim. Jeff remembered, and fear tightened, a chill coil around his heart. I have to think, he muttered, his thoughts, searching frantically for some release to his nightmare. I have to think. Of course, Dr. Thackeray's smile was one of paternal sympathy. We'll wait for your decision. Not very many minutes after Jeff Metzger had dazedly fled Dr. Thackeray's office, a section of the book-lined wall pivoted open. The two noted physicians looked expectantly to the heavy-set man who waited within the hidden niche. Well, Dr. Royce? The eminent psychiatrist grimly studied the monitoring devices focused on the room's vacant chair. No, he pronounced. Part 5. By habit, Jeff stumbled back to his lab. A wounded beast returned to his lair, he thought morbidly. None of his lab workers had appeared. No doubt they had been instructed to take a day off. His phone worked, at least. There was a dial tone. But then they wouldn't disconnect every phone in the center. Besides, whom could he tell? Gwen? She might believe him. More likely, she'd call a psychiatrist at the first discreet moment. And even without her believing him, her knowledge would endanger her life as well. It was monstrous. Surrounded by a sterile labyrinth of tile and cinder blocks and stainless steel shelves, of gleaming lab equipment, banks of humming research apparatus, watchful in the dead white glare of the fluorescence, he'd never realized how sinister a research lab could be. Suddenly felt like some ancient sorcerer, surrounded by the abhorrent paraphernalia of his evil delvings, a sorcerer who had suddenly succeeded with his conjurations, who now held the bleak knowledge of what demonic powers had claimed his soul. To become a partner in this inhuman conspiracy was unthinkable. Perhaps its arrogant, ruthless rationality would appeal to certain of his colleagues, but never to him. He could never endure the knowledge of so monstrous a betrayal. He would not become traitor to mankind. The alternative? Death, most certainly. Countless others had died for suspecting, for so much as entertaining ideas which might lead to exposing the secret order. He knew. They would show him no mercy. What chance had one man have against a hidden society that had held remorseless power for centuries? There was a slim chance, his only chance. He might pretend to go along with it. He could agree to join them in their dread order. Of course they would suspect. He would be carefully watched. But in time, they would accept him. For such enormous stakes, he could afford to bide his time. Wait patiently for years, perhaps. During that period, he could plan, build up unassailable evidence, learn their names, lay preparations for the day when he might expose their dark treason to the unsuspecting world. Hey, buddy, you look gloomy. Wife troubles, I bet. They don't go for their man spending all this time with the test tubes. I should know. How about some coffee? Dave Fronberger was grinning at him, already fiddling with the urn. Jeff blinked at him dumbly. After the ordeal of these last few hours,
Frohnberger, with his insinuating banalities and petty gossip, seemed almost an ally. Perhaps he could be one. "Thanks, Dave," he muttered, accepting the styrofoam cup. He was too shaken even to feel his customary disgust at the bitter coffee. Yes, Frohnberger, with his prying interest in his research, might be an ally. At least he could be one another party to this new cancer data. They couldn't murder and discredit the entire center staff. "You know, Dave," Jeff began, "I'm glad you dropped by just now. It strikes me that your own research is similar to mine in enough aspects that you might have some fresh insights into some problems I've run into. If you care to take time, I'd like to go over some of my notes with you and see what you think."
"I don't think you'll have time," Frohnberger smiled. He reached for Jeff's empty coffee cup, dropped it into a pocket of his lab coat.
"What do you mean?" asked Jeff thickly, coughing suddenly. There was pain deep, deep in his throat. Another racking cough filled his mouth with blood. And he knew what Frohnberger meant.